welcome to the Thinking Fellows podcast. My name is Caleb, and today I am joined by Drs. Scott Keith and Adam Francisco. We are recording by distance over internet call, so if you hear some technical difficulties, please bear with us. I'm sure as everybody knows and is experiencing right now, the COVID situation has changed the way we record. We've had pretty good success and pretty good quality during this time, but you know, every once in a while there can be a hiccup. So we thank you for your patience. If you have any comments about those kinds of things, you can always send them my way, but again, we're working with the internet that we got. 1517 Podcast Network is producing lots of different episodes on right now. We have Family Style Theology producing that did a series on Lent and Holy Week that you might want to check out, especially if you're thinking through these things more at home as you're doing home services or watching services from the house, and you want to you have time or free time to study these kinds of things. We also have been increasing YouTube content during this time, so we just concluded a series of videos on the Formula of Concord, and now I think we've started videos on the Decalogue. That's right, Dad, you've been on that?
Yeah, just today we recorded two.
So look forward to those coming out, or they are out. Hard to tell with recording schedules right now when things are releasing. We've changed our publishing schedule at 1517. We're just trying to help people out by publishing as much as we can and trying to reduce the time between recording and publishing certain materials. And, you know, if you've benefited from that, you can go to the 1517 website and you could consider supporting us with your donations. So thank you. All right, so let's get into today's episode. I thought we'd do something fun. My dad brought this up a couple weeks ago when we started recording these episodes from home, but there's a lot of people at home, a lot of articles and reporting coming out about heightened anxiety, anxiousness, sort of, and or depression and things like that. People feel like they don't have anything to do. And so I thought, hey, maybe we'd do an episode where we just talk about reading, watching, doing, what, keeping yourselves busy. What have you and Adam been doing, / reading, / watching? What have I been doing? And maybe keep the conversation away from these things that are making us anxious and about just utilizing this time in a way that is valuable, productive, or just fun. So what do you guys, so I guess I'll just go and ask you each individually, maybe, because I have a feeling these lists are going to be interesting. Like with you two, these book recommendation episodes go one of two ways. They either go like ridiculous full nerd library, or they go like completely obscure wood chopping books, or
nonsense.
Like how to fight a court martial or something like that.
So, I did just put a book on my shelf called The Geek's Guide to World Domination.
Weren't you reading a book on pandemics too?
Yeah, plagues in world history. That was kind of boring.
It sounds enthralling.
So, okay. All right. I'll start with you, Dad. So, because we need to get these airplane books out of the way.
Well, I mean, we can avoid the airplane books altogether. There have been quite a few. My favorite is called Wagger in the Wind. I forgot the author. But he's an Alaskan bush pilot, and he kind of recounts 25 years of being a bush pilot and hunting guide in Alaska via a couple of different airplanes, a Cessna 180 and a Piper Super Cub. Both very good bush planes, by the way, if you're wondering. Very good. Harmon Helmerichs, that's his name. Harmon Helmerichs, Wagger in the Winds. That was a great book. I'm right now, as I walk the new dog in the morning, listening to a book called Chasing the Demon, which is about, I'd say it's the Dan Hampton. I don't think he's a professional historian. In fact, he says he was a fighter pilot. But it's the history of World War II flight development that led into the test pilots that eventually broke the sound barrier in the United States.
Interesting.
And so, but there's a lot of World War II history in this book, just because so much of our aircraft technology, especially from that time period, is wrapped up not only with developments for World War II, but developments after World War II as we shall we say, appropriated Nazi technology and scientists to help us with this. The book that I read before that is called The Last Town on Earth. It was a novel, Adam hates novels, but it's a novel about a town in Washington, the state of Washington, during the 1928 flu pandemic that essentially shut down their town because they had no cases of the flu, and what that sort of did to everybody around them, and then what happened when the Spanish flu actually came to their town. Interesting point. One of the things that you learn from that is that as we react and or overreact to COVID-19, over 100 million people died of the Spanish flu. Over 100
worldwide, yeah.
100 million people died. So like a third of the population of the United States.
Yeah, that's pretty extreme.
That's a lot, yeah. So, and they didn't close down everything for that. So, they did a lot close down, but not everything. Then I left it over there. I don't remember the exact title, but I'm reading a book.
You want me to go get it? I'll go get it.
Right now.
While you're doing that, I've got a question. Why the book on planes? Is that your new thing? You're going to sell the truck and get an airplane?
It's been my thing forever that I want to get my pilot's license.
Really?
And since I was 16 and just have never had I've never really had the money to do it. Because it's, depending on how you do it, just to get the license, it's between $5,000 and $10,000. And that doesn't guarantee that you ever get to fly after you get your license, which is then just more money. And I think I could do it now. And so I've decided that 2020, I'll at least complete the ground school portion. And then probably early 2021, do the actual flight training and take the test for either a private pilot's license or a sport pilot license. So I've always been captivated by flying. My grandfather was a aircraft technician and jet maintenance operator on some very famous jets, and I grew up in Palmdale, which is very aircraft centered. So mornings right now I'm reading Mark Adams. It's called The Tip of the Iceberg. It's a journalist who has retracing the steps of, I think it's the 1879 Harriman expedition to Alaska, that basically took some very famous people at the time, including John Muir, on a boat up through various portions of Alaska to study icebergs and glaciers and things like that.
Oh yeah, I've heard about this book. There's some interesting observations about glacier melt before or just during the Industrial Revolution in there, right?
Well, I would guess that Mark Adams is sort of a global warming true believer, but at the same time, he's honest enough to point out that even by the time John Muir makes his way up to Alaska, the glaciers were already receding, which might lend one to believe that perhaps the warming that's taking place was taking place prior to, you know, many, many years of impacts via the Industrial Revolution.
Gotcha. Yeah, interesting.
I got a few more that I read in the past month, but that's enough
for any theological for the readers?
Well, not this month.
I will add a comment about that, because sometimes we've done these book recommendations in the past where I ask you and Adam what you guys are reading, and even if there's something theological in there, you know, often sort of books that are more hobby oriented or pique your interest outside of that pop up a lot. And I would guess, I don't want to speak for both of you, but part of this is when theology is your day-to-day job and you do some of the reading and diving and writing and speaking on it every day, you kind of want a break every once in a while, right?
Well, yeah, and in my case, like for instance, this month I did do the YouTube video series on the Formula of Concord. So I did dive back into Bente and Kolb, Aaron Nestgen, historical introductions to the Book of Concord, just to breeze up for that class. So,
yeah,
I mean, it was work related. I sometimes will read theology for not work related these days, but not very often.
Well, even if it's not for work related, it'll probably circle around into your writing or giving a presentation or something like that for one reason or another, right? If it was good, if you enjoyed it. So, all right, Adam. Have you been doing anything with your time at home?
Yeah, I've been growing grass in my backyard. And by grass, I mean like the real stuff that you walk on, not the not a synonym for marijuana.
It's California. You never know.
It's amazing because we had a drought for what, forever, and then
or five years.
A lot of rain lately. Yeah. So I thought I'd. It was funny. The first couple of days of the quarantine, I went to Costco. They're of course out of toilet paper, but everybody's got carts filled with stuff. And then I had a big bag of grass seed in there, and that's all. And vodka probably. But I was going through the checkout line and. Some guy looked at me and started laughing. He said, "You're going to grow grass now?" I said, "Yeah, I got dirt in my backyard." And anyway, some other guy said, "Well, aren't you going to stock up?" I said, "I think we're good." And then they got into a fight over who was to blame for this, Trump or blah, blah, blah. It was kind of interesting. Anyway, but around that time, I woke up one morning. I've got a lot of stuff. Whenever I teach, I keep up. I reread the stuff that I've read for years. So I'm reading a lot of primary texts for my now online courses at Concordia, medieval texts and like political philosophy. So most recently, Karl Marx's Communist Manifesto, which was really edifying. but on the side, my side reading gig, the mornings before everybody's up or the weekends. I started with C.S. Lewis's Abolition of Man. I read that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Last couple of years, I've read it every 4 or 5 months just because it's, it's kind of technical, but the point or the argument is just pretty, it's compelling and has a lot of explanatory power.
Yeah.
Though he's writing mid-20th century, it kind of helps, I think, about what, if you will, what went wrong or why we are the way we are. After that, I got this book. I can't remember whether I ordered it before the quarantine or whatnot. It's called The Other Worldview by Peter Jones. And I think I came across a lecture of his on YouTube. He's a Reformed PCA, Presbyterian Church in America guy, though he's British. And he writes this book. It kind of parallels Leslie Newbegin's The Gospel for the Greeks. Leslie Newbegin was some English Reformed guy who spent 20, 30, maybe 40 years on the mission field. And he goes back to England after, I think he was in India for so long. And the England he experienced was radically different than the England he experienced was radically different than the England he left when he was young. It had gone from being a predominantly, if you will, culturally Christian country to a practically atheist country. Anyway, Peter Jones, he's an Englishman. He grew up, he tells a story at the beginning of the book about how he grew up with one of the Beatles, went to the same school. After that, he came to the United States to do his undergraduate degree. And I think he took an MDiv maybe at Princeton, something like that. Then he goes off, that must have been like the 50s or 60s. Then he goes off to France and elsewhere. And he comes back to America, I think early 20th century or late, or I mean early 21st century or late 20th century. And he notices something like what Newbegin experienced after coming back to England from India, that America had been pretty radically secularized. But he argues with the title The Other Worldview that that there are basically two different worldviews one can embrace. One is kind of a dualism. He calls it twoism. There's either God and then his creation, or there's just a worldview he calls oneism, or you might call it monism, that there's one thing, whether that's a materialistic kind of oneism or a pantheistic monism. But he argues in the book that, this is making it very plain, but he argues that what we found so weird in the late 20th century with that movement surrounding like Shirley MacLaine and the so-called New Age.
Yeah.
He argues the reason why we don't talk about it anymore is because it'd become extremely mainstream, such that he says that most Americans, though they might go to church on Sunday, they might know, talk Christianese, so to speak, their worldview is basically monistic. Mm. And that book led me to order a bunch of other books from Amazon to kind of go down that rabbit hole. There's a book by University of Chicago economist, Nobel Peace Prize winning economist, called The Fourth Great Awakening. And he, you know, American historians will break down American history certain ways, but usually it's like the you know, the colonial period, the revolutionary era, the early republic, the Civil War, the Reconstruction, the Progressivist era, and so on and so forth. He breaks it down in terms of periods of religious revivals and awakenings. So that you've heard of the first and second Great Awakenings, of course. And then there's a third that takes place after the Civil War with the rise of like the social gospel movement and then a reaction to it and the rise of fundamentalism. He argues then, though, towards the end of the 20th century, starting the 1960s, a fourth Great Awakening took place, which, and he's doing mostly economic historian or history, but he argues that a new kind of worldview emerged starting in the 1960s and really started to crystallize in the late 20th century. That's
a drug-induced coma.
Well, it's a lot more complicated than that. But and I mean, he's a University of Chicago economic historian, so as you can imagine, it's not the lightest read. It takes you know, a couple. I guess I usually have about 6 shots of espresso by about 10 a.m.
Oh, I thought you were going to say vodka again.
Jeez. No, I only joke about the vodka. Uh-huh. Well, no.
Hey, I see here we need to make an editorial correction. Apparently, when I was rambling on, I said 1928 Spanish flu, and it's, of course, 1918 Spanish flu brought home primarily by World War I soldiers from their service.
I didn't want to correct you on the air. So
that's okay. That little thanks note. For the catch. I know it. I just am misspeaking.
I am also reading a book that's kind of theological. It's a collection of primary sources put together by a University of London philosopher named Paul Helm, who I believe David Anderson we had on the air. Yeah. He wrote the book Faithless to Fearless. I was one of his dissertation examiners. It's an anthology of texts on faith and reason, starting from the first century up until the 20th or early 21st century. I've got a paper I've got to write on faith and reason for, I don't know, early fall, I guess. And so I'm going through all those primary sources again. Are you hearing my ding?
Every listener on the planet is hearing your computer ding.
Well, that's good. It's a better list than mine. I mean,
you want more?
I got one more too. Did I say the cruelest miles?
Man, you guys read a lot.
1925 diphtheria outbreak in Nome, Alaska, and the.
Oh yeah, one of that InterVarsity Press book guy wrote with while he was dying of pancreatic cancer. Book is entitled "Who Gets to Narrate the World."
Do you ever read anything for pleasure?
These are fun. He likes this destruction of the West narrative.
I've seen this.
For a long time, I've been kind of on this worldview shtick. I really do believe Richard Weaver in this fantastic and I don't know fairly famous book called "Ideas Have Consequences" says in the first like couple pages of the introduction that worldview is the most important thing to understand a people and a culture. And I really believe that. That's Francis Schaeffer kind of stuff. You know,
there was a time when you couldn't stand that phrase, worldview. Has that changed for you?
I think that's Dr. Dean more than me. I think worldview is extremely helpful to understand and analyze things. I do have problems with worldviews when they become ideological. That's the term
I know you don't like ideologies.
Yeah. When it becomes this dogmatic, totalizing picture of everything.
But as a explanation resource.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and trying to understand why it is. For example, with apologetics, it shouldn't really be much of a surprise to us that people reject that Jesus rose physically, bodily, historically from the dead. Especially if their worldview is such that miracles just don't take
happen.
Place,
yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, that's a real simple explanation, but that's why I'm into the sort of the worldview shtick. And I think, you know, when Paul goes to Mars Hill, you know, he quotes some of those Stoic poets, and I think it's because, I mean, sure, maybe the Holy Spirit dropped those verses from pagan poetry into his head, but probably it's more likely that he did a little study on the worldview of those Stoic and Epicureans. So
Well, he might have been educated, is what you're saying?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe he did a little
He knew what he was writing about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, cool. I'm going to have to re-listen to this episode, like, slowly to make the list here.
I didn't go through all mine yet either, but we can stop.
No.
we can talk about what we're watching.
We can talk about what we're watching, what you're doing. I mean.
Oh, what I'm doing? I've been doing a lot of chores around the house.
I think that's one of the ones that's interesting to me, too, is, you know, within the borders of your property or your realm, what have you guys been doing? What
like it. Your realm?
What have you been able to do?
Well, before we got a foot of snow, I did a big property cleanup. And then, as you know, spent, 3 days building a screen door for my back door?
Yeah, that was an interesting project.
Perfecting my back screen door. It is a quintessential old man back screen door, though, and it is perfect.
Yeah, old Chevy, like, logo and all.
For the push bar?
Yeah, on the push bar of the door.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, you did do that. And
started working on ripping out the carpet in the living room to put in a wood floor. Discovered a asbestos tile under my carpet.
Really?
Yeah.
Awesome.
That's a really old, you know.
No, I'm not taking it out. I'm just leave it there. Undisturbed.
Good idea.
Quote unquote.
Undisturbed, yeah. Just put something over it.
Yeah.
I'll make sure to put my kids in hazmat suits before they come over to your house.
Well, it's an old cabin. I mean, I think in next year it'll be 100 years old. And so.
Emerson, stop licking that
thing. There's a lot there. That, and the old man that came before me really liked to nail in everything. So taking the tack strip out and the old molding out and everything was a bit of a chore.
That's true. What have you been doing, Adam? I've seen lots of pictures of your family on Instagram.
Yeah. My daughters discovered they've got their little iPads for school and they downloaded some sort of video maker app. So, they've been making movies.
Is it one of those Chinese spying ones though?
And I did learn how about a year ago, I learned the Macarena.
That's awesome. It's only about a decade late.
I'm such a bad dancer, right? go figure. I bet you are too though. Anyway, I learned it, and then I thought, I've tried to floss several times over the years since that's been a thing, and I just can't do it, and finally Elena broke it down for me, so I did a floss on a video. But more importantly, I don't know if it's ever been mentioned on the air that my roof has been leaking.
Oh, I've seen the pictures.
And yeah, I patched it before the big rain we got in the last couple of weeks, and every morning I go up on the roof, and then sometimes I'll go in the night if it's been raining heavily and just push water off my roof because I'm worried that the weight is going to open up more.
So those roofs in San Juan, like our old house in San Juan, are flat.
Yeah.
They have zero pitch to them.
Yeah.
And some of them, even if they're old, they have some depressions in them and they can really puddle up the water.
Oh yeah. That would be a pain.
Yeah. It's pretty bad.
Yeah. So you once made a comment, Scott, that we have like a petting zoo at our house.
Well, you have chickens and snakes.
Chickens, dogs, snakes, and frogs.
I stick to dogs.
He's ordering a tiger right here.
Just one?
$2,000. Who knew? but one of our frogs got a viral infection and sadly died. But the other one caught the virus too, and so I had to spend about $100 to take stupid, dumpy tree frog to a vet and get.
You took a tree frog to a vet during the quarantine. Is that essential?
Yeah.
Well, you should. You know, little Lainey.
Yeah, she'd be a little heartbroken.
How does a frog catch a viral infection?
Probably off of Lainey's hands.
It's fairly normal, I guess. Yeah. So, I mean, the vet knew exactly what it was. So, yeah. So I've learned a lot about reptiles and frogs and other things. Like you, Scott, I don't know if you do actually, but I kind of obsess about things being in their place. So I probably rearranged the garage about.
No, I never do that.
8 times. worked on my jiu-jitsu with my son.
Saw that. Yeah.
I
have been doing work too. We've created all this new content that doesn't. That takes some time.
Yeah, it's interesting. We've been recording or like setting up a studio so much more often than we do, which is, you know, I kind of last year was like, man, we couldn't possibly make any more content than we already do. And it turns out if everybody's locked at home.
Yeah, I mean, I've been recording usually an hour to 2 hours every day, sometimes even on Saturdays and Sundays, just trying to keep
just
up
on
the
Formula of Concord.
We did Formula of Concord. We're doing the Decalogue now. We've done a bunch of Thinking Fellows guest episodes before you got your mic all set up. We did a Q&A. Been on a couple other podcasts. It's just been busy. But it's been good. I even wrote a blog. I hadn't wrote a blog for 15, 17 in like forever.
Yeah, I wrote a blog. I finished the bulk of the writing for my MA thesis. And
you're done, huh?
Well, yeah, he's got to send it to you.
I've got it. Yeah.
Me?
I've got to edit it.
Yeah,
you. I've got to edit it pretty thoroughly. I have feedback from my supervisor now to work through and address, which is good. And once I make those, address those comments, it'll be making sure that the formatting and grammar are up to spec.
It'll be going to Adam.
Yeah. And then
he's like, is this part of the job?
Can I make a plug for some of the books we got coming out?
Yes.
Yes.
That would be good.
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of editing too. And 1517 has, for the next year and a half, 2 to 2 years, we have a full publication schedule already set up. Fairly soon, I don't know the exact date, but probably about less than a month, our newest book called The Pastoral Prophet. I think the subtitle is Reflections on the Prophet Jeremiah, is going to be released. And I think the guys who listen to and participate in the craft of preaching will really benefit from that. It's well written, good, very long book.
Who's the author?
Oh, gosh.
Gotcha.
Steve. I don't remember his last name.
Krischel.
Yeah. Stephen Krischel. That's it. But 100,000 words, you know, every chapter and verse of Jeremiah is covered in that book. And then following that, a book called Who Am I? I wanted for the title, a picture of Jackie Chan from, I forget what the movie was, where he's standing on a cliff saying, "Who am I?" But they didn't go for that. But the book on,
go figure.
On vocations, we might say those more natural vocations, like, you know, father, son, wife, mother, daughter, student, friend, et cetera, et cetera. And that's going to be used as a textbook at Concordia University of Irvine.
Scott Ashman's the editor.
There's a chapter in there that you and he co-authored. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I do. It's on being a student. Yep.
It's a real good chapter. And I'm not being paid to say that. let's see what else. We are working on not a new translation, but kind of a more modernized translation of Luther's On Christian Freedom. And then some chapters on the two propositions or theses he has there for the Here We Still Stand conference in October. And then starting in 2021, man, we've got 6-7 outstanding books that are like kind of almost already through the typesetting process. So wow. I won't give you the titles of those yet, but
that's great. Actually,
I need to send you still the works I have on Melanchthon and just get over myself and give them to you.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah, there's good.
You're talking about the Lochi, your translation of the Lochi. Is that what you're?
Well, there's part of that in it, but it's my dissertation broken into two different books for you to edit it.
Yes.
He's like, can't wait to comb through all those misplaced commas.
Yes,
there's a lot of them.
That's pretty funny. Well, let's see here. What else? If people, you know, like feel like they've run out of something to do, right? They've opened up every closet. They've reorganized their closets. They've rebuilt their screen door.
I can give them something to do. Adopt a husky. That takes some work.
Yeah. What is is there a, I mean, there's probably not a universal response for people who are anxious, but is there some good news in all of this in being at home for this extended period of time?
Well, I'd say to be careful. There's two types of anxiousness. There's like clinical anxiousness, which is a whole different ballgame.
Right, right, right.
But there's then just sort of the general anxiousness that comes about when the whole country / the whole world seems to be in a state of upheaval. It's difficult because there, in our lifetimes, this is unprecedented, right? So this is, we, even after 9/11, there was, you know, a bit of a lockdown wherein people were scared and didn't do much for some days, right? But there wasn't like an order to not leave your house or to wear a mask. And I think the first thing I'd say is if you are anxious, that's rather natural. Like the whole world seems to be
changing
and levied against you to scare you. For me, with skirting the danger of getting political here, I'd say be careful to absorb the flood of information that you're getting critically, and to compare it to sort of past bad things that have happened for sort of a point of comparison for how bad is this actually.
Yeah.
Because if you listen to the news or the people at press conferences, you'll hear this is like the worst thing to ever happen to humanity. And it's just not. I mean, we just mentioned just going back 100 years to the 1918 Spanish flu, and many more people are dying without the medical ability to really do anything about it or to understand what's going on. Mm-hmm. You may have one opinion or another on whether or not we've had an appropriate response to this, but the fact is that for the most part, we're able to have a response to it. Right? Yeah. We're able to find some medicine that might help. We're able to work on a vaccine. We're technologically, for most of us, able to stay home and still do some work. Most of us, certainly not all of us. But know that it's natural to be scared. Absorb information critically. And know that at the end of the day, and this is hard to say at a time like this because your world could seem like it's falling apart. But at the end of the day, you know, the promise that Christ is for you and that Christ has died for you and that Christ has become, you know, the first fruits of your resurrection doesn't necessarily help you if somebody's lost their job and you're financially in a real pinch right now. But at the same time, the big stuff, you know, the what's going to be of me and mine at the end of the road, the big stuff is taken care of. And I would hope and I'd pray that at a time like this, you know, the people have created enough of a community around themselves that they're not enduring this alone. And for those that are, you know, I pray that people come around them that can help them out, even if it's just by conversation and listening. I don't know if I said anything. That was a bit of a ramble.
I think it was pretty good. I mean, I don't think I could top that. The only thing I would add is that sometimes people start rolling with the minimal information acquired. So I'll see people saying, like, I can't even go out for a walk. I need to exercise or something like that. Based on hearing that, like, the order is a quote-unquote stay in place. Well, yeah. If you start to examine those a little more, like in California, for instance, if you see what the exemptions are for staying in place, one of those is physical recreation. Yeah. And so you might be able to then responsibly within both the bounds of these orders and without bringing harm to your neighbor, you know, exercise, be a little more free than you think you can, ride your bike somewhere.
Well, like is always the case, the internet and social media on this is a two-edged sword.
Yeah.
It's provided a lot of opportunities for us to do things like this and provide extra content so that people have stuff to do. And, you know, even recreationally, Netflix and Disney Plus and everybody seems to have stepped up a little bit so that there's stuff for you to do. But, you know, that's why I said absorb information critically, because so much of it's just wrong.
Right.
You know, I can't tell you how many times somebody has come to me over the last 2 weeks via text or my wife or something and said, I just heard of a story that the family of four was pulled over and each cited for being together in a car. And I'm like, yeah, that's fake news. You know, so be careful with things like that. And the times are hard enough, we don't need to make them harder by focusing on things that may or may not be the case.
Right. I think that's a good point. It's really easy to get caught up in the clickbaity stories right now, only to turn out 12 hours later that it was all fake.
Yeah.
And that can go sort of multiple directions with this. But yeah, I think, you know, if you feel like you need to do something and you feel like you think you can't, there is the ability to investigate actually like what the bounds of what you're allowed to or what you can do, and then also weigh that against how you think this is going to impact your neighbor and your family.
Yeah. We did a Zoom Q&A with Dan Price and Caleb and me last week, where like 35 people signed up to just come on Zoom. And I didn't know what to expect from it. And it was a little awkward for me at first. But at the end of the day, it was actually a decent way to get some socialization in too. So I'd say to people, utilize the technology that is this two-edged sword, but use the good side of the sword too. Hey, Adam, what do you think?
I like your caution against fake news, following fake news. So it's so easy to watch a YouTube clip or the news or read something and get all riled up about something that confirms something you're already riled up about.
Yeah.
I also like your word about, well, you didn't say it exactly this way, but I do think we will get through this. Things will probably be different, but we will get through this. This is huge for those of us who are living. We've never experienced anything like this before, but it's not common for the human experience, but it's not uncommon either. I guarantee you there are probably several thousand young men and women stuck on submarines somewhere in the middle of the ocean who've been in quarantine for 3 months, perhaps.
Yeah.
This isn't the end of the world. I kind of wish it was, but
it's not the end of the church or likely your church.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be odd Sunday, on Easter, right? Yeah. There's gonna be all these, I assume, what, 95% of churches across America will be empty.
Yeah, that's definitely weird.
Which is going to be interesting. There'll be a lot of traditions that we're all used to. I was thinking just last night how I'm going to kind of miss seeing my two daughters in their Easter best or whatever. You know, they always get dressed up and we take a family picture and they look beautiful and so on. That'll be kind of sad, but it doesn't change the fact that the churches might be empty, but the tomb, the tomb is empty too, though, or was empty. So it doesn't change the fact that
Christ is risen.
Christ died and rose for our sins and our justification as an accomplished fact.
That's right.
So I don't know. I'm kind of stoic about all these things. We homeschool, so my wife is totally used to having all the kids.
Yeah, I was going to say for us too. I mean, Joy doesn't work, and I work from home, and so this is typically have opportunities to like go do things apart more so than we have now, but on the whole, it's been sort of life as normal.
Yeah. I haven't had in and out in like, I can't even remember. But I feel really lucky. That seems to be the, you know, one of the bigger disruptions to my life. And so, I can kind of make light of it, but there are so many around us here in the Big Bear area whose entire lives have been flipped upside down. And so
for people that are listening, and we probably said it before on the show, but the area in which we live and I spend most of my time is driven by tourism.
Right.
And so we've got a foot of fresh snow on the ground,
and ski resorts have had to be closed,
and they would have had an epic year if they could have stayed open
this late,
as far as how late they're able to stay open. And all those people are laid off. The other big industry up here are restaurants. All the restaurant workers are laid off. There's very little up here that is still open because there's not like a host of what's considered essential businesses up here.
Right.
So if you've been impacted by that, I just hope, you know, these comments aren't trying to make light of your situation.
Oh, no, not at all. Like I said, there are people that are really struggling right now financially and otherwise. And I know a lot of people, I've even been seeing this and listening to this on some of the podcasts I listen to, people that aren't used to their kids being home this much or their spouse being home this much, and it's causing some turmoil, you know, and I've heard some real horror stories about what happened like in South Korea after they let everybody out, you know, and I don't want that to happen here. So
what was the one the other day? My wife and I have been playing a game. It's why do you do it that way? There are no winners.
Yeah. And so this, there's some real stuff, but at the end of the day, I mean, I hope this is maybe a, I hope it doesn't come across trite or dismissive, but, the big things are really taken care of in Christ.
Right.
And it's left to us to sort of work out the day to day here, with God's help and to his glory and to benefit our neighbors. And, I, you know, maybe take a look at that piece I wrote on vocation and sort of see how this works itself out in everyday life.
All right. Well, hey, thank you guys. I'll make sure to, I'm going to have to re-listen to this episode and get a list of those books. I do think, even if you just skim through those on Amazon, it might be kind of fun to just see how obscure some of the reading gets if you missed it on the first pass of this episode. Thank you for joining us. We'll catch you next week.